from your hostess with the mostest, Lauren Hines.
This is I Did It My Way, the podcast that brings you into the story of leading entrepreneurs and tastemakers.
Liz King is an event planning superhero by day and closeted tech geek and introvert by night. Distraught by the thought of everyday civilians being conquered by spreadsheets, she resolved to rechannel her organizational and tech-savvy superpowers and launched Liz King Events while still running events full-time for Columbia University. Liz King, now Caruso, voraciously shared content on event best practices via social media and quickly became a thought leader and influencer amongst her peers. Her hopes of being an incognito event superhero went down the drain as her cover was blown when she started making cameos on lists like Successful Meeting List of 25 Most Influential People in the Meetings Industry for 2 years in a row and Connect Magazine's List of 40 Under 40 Up and Coming Event Planners in 2011. Liz now comfortably wears her cape and employs her superpowers to help entrepreneurs and brands like Claudia Chan and Ramit Sethi plan smart, tech-savvy events to better engage their attendees. Outside of client events, Liz uses her prowess to educate and challenge her industry peers on how to better integrate technology into live events to create a more winsome audience experience through auxiliary outlets, TechCTalk.com, and Planner Tech, of which she is the founder. When not saving Gotham from the event planning woes, Liz can be found unwinding by learning how to code, brushing up on her Korean, or indulging in Korean cuisine, all in civilian geek attire, of course.
Hey, everybody. I'm Lauren Hines, and I am so glad you all have decided to join us today for this installment of I Did It My Way. We apologize for the background here. It's a little hazy and gloomy, but sometimes that's how it is in production when you don't have the ideal setup, but the show must go on. Today, I am so happy to be joined by the astounding, amazing Liz King, or Liz Caruso, excuse me, newlywed of Liz King Events. If you guys haven't heard of her, you may have heard of Texie Talk. Or you might have heard of the huge conference that she runs every year that focuses in on the technology elements. We'll hear a little bit more about that as it pertains to running your events effectively. But Liz King is a beast. She's someone I respect and thousands of other event professionals respect and look to for advice and industry expertise as it pertains to how we get the maximum impact for our event experience. So welcome, Liz, to I Did It My Way. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. I was so glad we were able to connect. I know you're a super busy woman and you're in the midst of the final prep for your conference June 2nd, right?
Yeah, we have about 3 weeks left. So we're in the final push. You know how that is.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. Well, I mean, at this point, it's kind of like putting out fires that might have come up, right?
Yeah, you're just basically rolling with it. Anything that's happened so far is happening until the event. So we're just making it come together.
Yeah.
And make it look like it was all planned to look like that.
Right. Yeah. The one key element that no one knows. Like if something goes wrong, no one knows. It's okay.
That's a successful event.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about your conference before we get into the podcast here. Can you tell our group about how many folks are there, what's the feel and the purpose of the conference, and some highlights from it?
Sure. So it started as an event technology showcase, which was just a 2-hour event. And we would showcase all these different companies. And then we realized that planners could see companies all day long. But if they don't know kind of like the fundamentals of integrating these technologies and how do you know which one is best for you and which one is not a good fit, then it's not that helpful. So we expanded it into a full day conference. And we get about 250 corporate and independent event planners who come out. And we also are going to be live streaming this year. So hopefully
exciting.
Us online. And it's just a good opportunity to not only educate fellow event professionals, but for us as planners ourselves, it's kind of our playground. Like sometimes we want to do something with a client and they'll say, yeah, I don't think that's a good idea. I don't know if it's been proven. We're like, okay, so we'll do it ourselves and then we'll show you that it works. Mm. So we like to play with, you know, the room setups and the timing of the sessions and entertainment and things like that. It's a really fun, casual event that
Very cool.
happens to also be educational. So it's called Texie Talk Live, and you can find it at texietalklive.com, which is TECHSYTALK.com. And we host it around early June. So this year it's June 2nd, 2017. And it's usually around that time. We try to get it before all the kids are out of school and you know, right after, hopefully, conference season. So hopefully people aren't too busy.
So Liz, I really want to hear, we hear a lot about the technology and the things that you do, but I want to talk a little bit about Liz King or Liz Caruso, the person. You know, first off, congratulations, of course, on recently being wed.
Thank you.
Yeah. We were on your podcast not too long ago talking about how costly weddings are.
Yes, I remember that conversation.
Yeah, you remember it. Now it's like ingrained in you, and you're a firm believer that the cost of how much expensive weddings.
Exactly. I'm working on a blog post about, you know, what I learned as a planner planning a wedding, because it's so different, corporate events compared to weddings. And, you know, everyone says planning your own events is, you know, so much, you're so much more invested. And, but I plan Texie Talk Live all the time. So I assumed, you know, it's not going to be worse than that. That's my baby. But no, wedding is definitely a whole nother beast.
What were the challenges? Because I find a lot of people who are specialized in corporate events, they come over and they say, I can also plan your wedding, when they want to open up to that area of the social marketplace. What do you feel was more challenging, jumping from corporate to planning your own wedding?
Well, I think it's the emotional side of things that makes things more complicated. It is, at the end of the day, it's logistics. And that's, I think, where people feel like it's the same thing. It's timelines. It is a budget. There's vendors involved. There's a lot of coordination, but you're just, it's that person. Or in our case, it was our only wedding. That's our plan.
Yeah, right.
One wedding, right? So, exactly. So, you know, you're thinking about what you want, also paired with who you are as people and your personalities. Like for us, we're both introverts. So as much as we have like really wide networks of people that we love, yeah, both of us would be super uncomfortable saying our vows in front of more than a small group, you know, so how do you do that? And all the details. And of course you want it to reflect your style, your personality. Sure. It's just a lot more like when you have a corporate event, it's a brand, there's set colors, set fonts, and you basically stick to that and you're good. With this, you're involved, you know, the in-laws, the parents, mm-hmm, the bridal party and all the things that go on in their lives. It's not like paid staff and people are just, oh, you have to show up at this time and do what you're supposed to do. They're friends and family. So I think all of that gets, it's just more complicated. It made it more special too, though. So once you're able to kind of like make it happen,
yeah,
it was great.
So now going back to Liz King Events, tell me about how is it running, you know, a team of folks? What are some of the challenges? I know one of my dear friends who's like a brother from another mother actually works alongside you and feels so honored and blessed to be part of your team. But tell me, what is it like running a team? Did you already know you were going to be managing folks in your later life, or how do you convey that? Because a lot of people watching are solopreneurs, you know, and they may be trying to have a team or figuring out the whole intern world, but what is it like working with a team to create such a massive production in different events?
You know, I think it's one of the biggest challenges of any solopreneur or entrepreneur who then wants to grow a team. And in my case, I was just so lucky and blessed, because Ed and I were friends before I started the company. And he found out about me starting the company very early. And we just kind of were like, hey, why don't we just do this together? And he's been involved since the very beginning. And they say not to work with friends and family. I don't agree with that at all. At the end of the day, we've hired a lot of staff for part-time, full-time positions. And we haven't had a lot of staff members. They've all been amazing. But I find, you know, coming up, for example, to Texie Talk Live this year, the staff is, you know, Ed, long, long time friend, my sister, my brother, my husband. Wow. Wow. You know, those are the people that you call in when you really need someone you can count on. But in terms of growing a team for us, it's always been a very organic part of what we do. Kelly worked on our team for several years and she volunteered at several of our events. Mm-hmm. And then I noticed that, you know, if we had an event coming up, I would tell Ed, like, make sure Kelly can be there to do this thing, because we can't do whatever it is without Kelly. Yeah. And that's when I realized, okay, so Kelly needs to be our team.
Right, right, yeah. Right.
You know, so it's been always like that. We haven't ever done like an official job posting and done interviews and things. But I think that is what makes it successful. They're meaningful relationships. We're friends with these people at the end of the day. You know, we become family.
For sure.
And we work very closely together. But I think a lot of people think, you know, between Liz King events and Texi Talk and the other things that I'm involved in, we must have a really big team. But for the most part, it's Ed and I just like busting our butts all the time.
What are some things you feel that you have that has enabled you to be consistent, I guess, or have certain, what structures are there in place, or what things have you been able to do to really manage all it is the empire of the kind of Liz King events?
Well, I'm glad that it seems structured to somebody. you know, to me, honestly, day to day, it feels really inconsistent and unstructured. And Ed and I both work remotely, and we are on the phone and text all the time. And you know, that's how we get stuff done. Right. And on a given day, I feel driven in a million directions. I'm super involved in my family. Right before this podcast, I had like an air conditioner being installed. These are the things you deal with when you work from home. You know, it's just running around and managing a lot of stuff. But for me, I think it comes down to the fact that I really enjoy doing what we do. So I don't, you know, even though I have my breaks and I like to, you know, take time off and vacation and do other things, it's easier for me to jump back into the work because I love it. And so Texi Talk Live, it's one of those things that, you know, we do every year and I get excited. As soon as it's over, we usually meet up the next day and start talking about, so, you know, now what? Now what can we do better for next year? And our client events are very much the same way. We spend a lot of time getting to know them. They become like friends, and then it's fun to plan those events too. But yeah, I mean, over the years, I've done things like, you know, blocking my time and identifying when I'm working on projects and when I'm working on various things. That way it's in the calendar. I've done, you know, just morning routines, making sure that every morning I do a few things, personal and professional, just to bang it out. And so I've implemented lots of structures, but they kind of come and go depending on the phase of life. And
right. Yeah, for sure. That blocking of time is so critical. One of the people I listen to calls it tiger time. Her name's Amy Porterfield. And she just calls it tiger time because she's so ferocious with those blocks. And I think I personally need to be more ferocious with those blocks of time, you know, unless it's an appointment. But share with everyone how you kind of got your start, because it started at a very, at a time when I think most people wouldn't have decided to start their own business. But would you mind sharing some of the early stories there and how you began Liz King Events?
Sure. So my company started around 2009, 2010. The economy was not doing very well. And I like to say that I was just, you know, really naive, and I didn't know what that meant for a business, and I didn't care.
Right.
And I was working full-time for Columbia University doing events for them. But I knew I had this bug to do something on my own. And I think starting a business at that time, there were a few benefits. One was because I had the full-time job, I was able to be very selective about which events I took on. They didn't have a lot of time, and I did have a steady income. And that allowed my brand to get identified very quickly by the public. They didn't see me doing a wedding and then a corporate event and then a fundraiser and a bunch of free stuff. I was basically doing what I was really interested about from the very beginning. And back then, you know, budgets were super tight. So a lot of people wanted people to work for free. And back then I wasn't smart enough not to do that. And so I took advantage of really every opportunity around me. Anyone who wanted me to write a blog, be on a podcast, tweet for them, you know, do a social media lounge, like whatever it was, half the time I didn't even know what I was doing. I would just put it together and then, you know, do it. And I was just so excited about doing something.
Yeah.
That really got the name out there and established relationships with a lot of people. I felt when I left Columbia full time, you know, to do this full time in 2013, I immediately, when I did that, I had no clients lined up for 2013. I left in January and I thought, this is going to be a huge test. And I would say for all of 2013, I just felt it all paying back, all those 2.5 years of, you know, things I had done for free and things I had done in exchange for some kind of promotion or in exchange for something. Those people all then came back and were recommending people to me. And I was really busy our first year, and we were able to double our revenue every year for the first few years, which like never happens. And I think it's because I built it really slowly, and because everyone, it just happened to work. Everyone's budgets were really tight. I was really willing to do kind of whatever to get my name out there. And I think it really paid off in the end.
Hey everyone, hope you've been enjoying this episode of I Did It My Way. I'm Lauren Hines, your hostess, and at this point we wanted to encourage you all to let us know if you have a business or you have a project that you're pushing forward. We would love to welcome you as a sponsor for I Did It My Way. In addition, we're here in the local Georgia area, so we have other opportunities if you are interested in being able to expand your business here in Atlanta, the metro Atlanta area, or if you are local to here. We want to encourage you to reach out and find out some opportunities available through the I Did It My Way sponsorship program, as well as some on-the-ground activities that we do through Atlanta Wedding and Event Professionals Network throughout the year. We have dozens of opportunities for you to be able to partner with us for more than simply the podcast, which of course will reach our audience, but also of course if you want more live on the ground visibility as well in the more high touch capacity, we're happy to be able to introduce some of those opportunities to you too. More so, we just love partnering with other vibrant entrepreneurs who are creating their stories every single day. And so help us along our journey, and we'll help you along yours as you consider partnering with us for I Did It My Way as a sponsor and beyond. If you want to reach out to us, you can contact me, Lauren Hines. You can reach out at info@atlantawep.com, or you can reach out to us by phone at 1-800-316-7816. And we look forward to hearing from you soon. Enjoy the rest of your journey, and we hope you enjoy the rest of this episode. Thanks for checking it out.
That's really good. That's so good. So what was that deciding factor? Because you said you didn't have a year full of events on the roster, but she said, I left January 2013. So what was that made you decide to leave the safety of a corporate position?
That was Ed. We went out to dinner one night, and he's like, you know, again, we were friends before we worked together, and we had, you know, a meeting. I remember at Cheesecake Factory, we're sitting across the table from each other, and he's like, you know, we're colleagues, obviously, but as your friends, I feel like I'm not being a good friend to you if I don't tell you, you can do this on your own. You should leave Columbia. And I thought, oh yeah, you're so crazy. Of course you think I can do it. You're friends, you know? And I went home and told my family, and they were like, yeah, no, you definitely could. And I thought, okay. Wow. And I don't know what, I think it was just the courage from their support that I said, okay. So I quit in December and I gave my 1 month notice. And I remember, you know, the boss being like, so what are you doing next? And I'm like, I really don't know. I mean, I knew in my head I wanted to start a business, but I wasn't even, I mean, I had the business, but I knew I wanted to do that full time.
Right.
But I wasn't even confident enough to tell her that that's what I was going to do. I was just kind of like, oh, we'll see. I don't know. Maybe I'll work at Starbucks.
Right. There's always the best route, if, you know.
And I love that. And then we just picked up. My last day was a Friday, and the first like Liz King events full-time working day was Monday, and I got a call from a client that I had pitched 3 months earlier who turned me down, and their event planner had totally failed the event, and they needed me in an emergency and paid me very well, and that was my first client 3 days after I left. And those are the things you can't.
Right, right. Yeah. So, okay, now you developed a niche in the events world, because first you said you were planning a lot of the events that were coming your way. And then you said you also got to build the type of events or do the types of things that you really wanted to do. And then we create this niche within the world of technology and events. What was that transition like? How did you arrive there?
So on the planning side, I knew I liked to do conferences. And so as I planned different kinds of conferences, I learned in particular, I really like working with startups. They tend to be very flexible. And I really just like that, you know, I think that's why I'm an entrepreneur. I like that ground level, everyone's doing everything. You don't really have like a set job. So I like working in companies like that. And then with technology, actually, it's that I had a Twitter account. I am techie and I've integrated that with our clients all the way, but I would never have thought like, oh, that's something I should sell or market myself as. Instead, I had this Twitter account, and BizBash, who's, you know, one of the largest publications in the industry, came to me and said, hey, can you do a social media lounge in the middle of our trade show floor in 2010 when Twitter was really, really big? And I said, sure. What is a social media lounge? And they were like, well, we're not really sure. You just figure it out. And I said, okay. I went out with a friend that night and I said, well, what could that be? And so we came up with some ideas and we did it.
How cool.
And, you know, it was in the center of this lounge, and everyone from that point forward started referring to me as a technology genius and integrating events with technology. And I definitely owned that. I mean, it was like a moment for me to realize, oh, this is something I'm actually good at. And then we took it from there, and over time, that's now.
How I love that you said that, because so many people think we have to know the whole story before we get into entrepreneurship. We have to know what our focus is going to be. And sometimes it's as simple as just do it and figure out what people are going to pay you for. Because before long, you do something long enough, you're going to realize enough people keep coming and saying the same things. You realize you might be doing this, you might be doing X, but you're getting paid for Y, even though you're in X's industry.
So, I think that happens most of the time.
Yeah. And you just got to be busy and you'll figure it out, you know, you really will figure it out. Be busy and do it well, you know, and you'll figure it out. What were, you know, in terms of the technology side of things, I want to transition there because I think we are, and obviously we're in the information age, the digital era where everything is so tech driven and technology driven. And you find a way to maximize the event experience with it. Can you elaborate a little bit about the event experience and what that is for Liz King or Liz Caruso?
Sure. So, you know, I think in the events industry, we focus so much on, you know, the logistical things, the timelines, the budgets, the venue, and all of that stuff is so important. But I think we don't spend enough time thinking about the experience that our attendees have, the experience our sponsors have, our speakers. And, you know, I'm sure everyone has noticed we are in very competitive times.
Yes.
A person could go to 100 events tonight in New York City. So why are they going to choose your event? And then let's say they go, well, what's going to make them come back year after year? At the end of the day, I really believe that's from an experience. And I think it comes down to very simple things like easy registration process, easy check-in process, great content, great networking, fun, you know, some basic factors. And I think that technology amps all of that up. I remember in 2009, I predicted that paper registration was going to be non-existent. Like you get to an event and they've printed out Excels.
Yes.
I'm really embarrassed to say that we are not.
It kills me to say that. You have not, I go to these beautiful, it's supposed to be these well-promoted events. Now you go there and they're flipping through the sheets, like crossing out names.
Yeah.
But it came from a digital platform. So why are you trying? Right.
That's the worst part. And there are free platforms that allow you to do the check-in, you know. But especially when I see that for people who are doing events for the events industry, I'm like, you know. So to me, those little things, often not that expensive either, can really make a difference in the experience of a person, the attendee in particular. And I think it's just really important to think about the fact that people are connected to their phones all the time and they don't want to go to your conference and put their phone in their pocket and like feel like they can't bring it out all day. They want to use it.
Yes.
You could actually get them to use it to better engage with what's happening. They don't have to be on Facebook the whole day, but that, you know, that's like above and beyond the logistical timeline stuff.
For sure.
A real thought about, like, you know, pulling pieces together strategically to make a great experience.
Yeah. You know, I was on your blog and I was all in this one post about the lighting, some of the ways that you can affect even lighting, because, you know, as myself, as like this kooky person, I go and I'm always like, how can we do it differently? How can we do it differently? As if it's not great enough. But, you know, you always have to be thinking as an entrepreneur, what's beyond the corner, what can't I see and how can I get there and then bring that to the market and kind of lead that, right? And you did a post on atmospherics and changing the lighting and all that. Do you mind talking a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, lighting is so important. You and I spent a few minutes before going live on this podcast talking about our own lighting.
Oh my gosh, yes. And can we sorry, get guys. And,
I mean, you know, it is what it is. And I think it's something a lot of people don't think about. Changing the colors, access to, you know, as much as you can, natural lighting for events and venues is always really important.
Right.
But when you're in, you know, especially like a conference room with four white walls, you can completely transform a person's mood, their engagement level, just by changing the colors in the room. Mm-hmm. And there's a company in New York that we work with called Luminescence Productions. You know, the traditional uplights are, you know, the light with a little like plastic piece of paper and you choose out of eight colors. It's a simple thing, but it's digital uplights and you can use an iPad to control. You could do chartreuse and like fuchsia, whatever color combinations you want. and you can change them throughout the day, throughout a minute. You can have them flashing and doing all kinds of creative things. It's one example of things I think people underestimate how important it is. Right. Another would be seating. So just different seating arrangements, different seating styles.
Sure.
I feel like I can't sit in a conference without a table. I feel like I have no lap. Yeah. So I need something. Whereas Ed is really happy just sitting in a chair with his laptop. He doesn't need that.
Yeah.
So
or standing in a corner somewhere or something.
Yeah. People like to have options. So to do a full room with just theater style, what if you could mix it with classroom, with lounge furniture, with yoga balls, like all of that helps
yoga
people.
Balls. To that sounds good. That's cool. Yoga balls. I haven't seen yoga balls in a conference.
Oh yeah, it happens. You just rent them or
I like that. Very cool. So what are some effective things that you feel you've seen, Liz, for getting folks to your event? It's one thing to have an event, set the environment, you've got the logistics down, you've got great speakers, but in terms of the marketing of it, and whether it's tools or anything, strategies you feel that have been really helpful for you without giving away your secret sauce, but just some help to fellow producers and planners out there who are putting on events that require 100, 2, 3, 4, 1,000 people to attend it. What are some things you feel have been very helpful for you?
So one of my favorite tools is called Bizibo, and they're like a registration platform and an event management platform. And they have two features built in, which I think regardless of whether you were using them or not, although I love using them, I think they're just really great for promotion. So one is called double-sided rewards. And the idea is that I register for your event, I get a link, and I'm asked to share that. If I share that with my network and someone registers, they'll get whatever percent off, 10%. And I get 10% of my money back up until I earn a free ticket. So it really gives your attendees incentive to market this event. And that particular platform manages all of that on the back end. So at the end of your event, you're not counting how many shares and cutting people checks. It's an automatic process. So these people are really earning their money back as they go.
Wow.
And I found that it really encourages people to share. And then they also have something called Hot Leads, which some other registration platforms have. Just someone starts registering and they don't come back to that process. They get distracted or their computer shuts down or whatever. It just sends them a reminder. Hey, we noticed you started registering, but you haven't completed the process. You can offer a discount at that point if you feel like maybe it's price that's an issue. We recently did this for a client event and they sold 40% of their tickets through Hot Leads. So they may have sold 40% less tickets if they weren't following up with those people. Huge difference. And then I think, you know, affiliates, finding out who in your audience has an audience of their own and what can you do to incentivize them to share it with that audience, whether it's front row tickets or a free t-shirt or whatever it might be. Those are some things that work.
Very cool. Very cool. That's powerful. Yeah. And I'll put the links down, of course, in the description here, everybody, so you can be able to see Bizibo Hot Leads. And of course, feel free to leave a comment, ask, submit a question for myself or for Liz, or some ideas that you can have implemented for partners and affiliates to be able to spread your message about your event. So Liz, what if you could pick out of a hat, you know, I know everyone asks this question, but just the lessons that you've learned from starting your company in a downturn economy to now being in a groove, doing what you love, but still having to keep all these plates going. What do you feel are your, you know, if you were to pull out lessons, I wouldn't ask the one nugget, but if you were to pull out some lessons that you would encourage to someone in the journey as well, what would you share?
There's a lot, but I think maybe the most basic one would be to be really flexible and to trust your intuition and your gut and work really hard. And I think the combination of those three things leads you to very good places. When I started my business in 2010, everyone was telling me, you know, you got to write this business plan, you got to have all these components to it. And I did spend some time thinking about those things. I never envisioned anything that I'm doing today. I would never have put on paper that I'm going to launch TexiTalk.com and this conference called TexiTalk Live. I now run a group called Founder Network, which is to support other female founders and who run their own businesses. That's like not even in the events industry, but I would never have put that on paper. And one of the things that I've been able to keep our business running because we do more than just the event planning. We have the TexiTalk stuff, but I've also been doing speaking, consulting, and I think being flexible about, you know, what how you're going to make your living is really important. I remember the first time I got a request to do a speaking engagement. I am a terrified introvert. I was like, no, thank you. And I talked to a colleague about it, and they said, you know how much money you can make just speaking?
Just talking.
Yeah, about something that you're passionate about for an hour.
For sure.
I ended up like just setting a few topics that I talk about because I found that for me, it's way more comfortable if it's something I know really well.
Right.
And set the price. And because of that, I've been able to travel all over the country, around the world, and get paid.
How cool is that?
Something I ever would have put in my business plan. So, but I think, you know, you can't just sit back and be like, oh, maybe it'll all happen to me. You have to be working nonstop and trying new things. You know, it's the work ethic definitely has to be there.
Yeah.
But with that, the flexibility, I think, is really important.
For sure. For sure. At what point do you say, because I think a lot of people have challenges now, and this kind of, we're closing out towards the end here, but people have a lot of challenges transitioning from the pro bono events world, I call it, up until when you're saying, hey, this is what I'm worth. Here's my price point. If you can't meet there, then, you know, and I can't help you here, then, you know, we're just not a good fit. You know, at what point was that for you? Was it schedule? Was it like, you know, just being tired of enough of this type of event or this type of client? What were some of the markers that you knew at this point, I'm no longer having to or wanting or going to do this side of the business anymore?
Yeah. So, you know, the advice I give looking back, it's not necessarily how I did it, but it's what I definitely would recommend is know your worth from the beginning. Know what you might charge per hour and what that's going to have to look like in order for you to sustain a business in this industry.
Yeah.
And then always quote a price, even if you're willing to do it for free. So you could say this event is going to take, you know, to hire us for this event, it's going to cost $10,000. You know, because we're really passionate about the cause, we're willing to do this for free, but we're looking for $10,000 of exchange value. That might be introductions to people they know who would be planning events. It might be promotion on their website as the event planner and use of all the photos and videos of that event for your portfolio. You know, you can identify the value of that and make that exchange. So then at some point you need to decide, I can't keep living off of the value exchange. I need the cash. And that's when I think you have to make that change. And I think that's earlier than most people think it is. I think I now have a harder time charging because I waited too long to do that. But you have to know your value and you should stick to that from the very beginning. Otherwise, you always have to unbrand yourself as the girl who does everything for free.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And then you hear, this is the pop culture of rebranding. Everyone's rebranding.
It's not the kind of rebrand you want to make, though, I'm telling you.
That's cool. Very cool. Well, Liz, thank you so much for sharing the time with us today. I know people can go on to Texie Talk, TECHSYTALK. Just Google, you'll find the conference. You'll find, of course, the podcast. And then founder, you know, would you mind sharing how people can find that that platform for women entrepreneurs?
Sure. It's foundernetwork.com, but it's FOUNDHER. So the her is in there. And it's an online platform, so you can participate from anywhere in the world. And we have monthly video chats for this is the first place I'm announcing it, but we're coming out with a podcast of our own there. And it's just designed to, you know, be a community and educate and empower females who run their own business or want to run their own business.
Powerful, powerful. That's awesome. And you can do it. You can do it, ladies. Everyone can do it. And one of the beautiful things about business is you can set your price point. There might be a statistic out there that says, hey, women, you're getting 70 cents on the dollar to the male, but you can set your price point in, as an entrepreneur and a leader and a founder in your business. So thank you, Liz, for creating such a, being such a powerful sphere of influence for so many people and being able to still create platforms that empower and encourage others along the journey while you're so busy doing your own and with your new family as well. So thank you so much for joining us, Liz. How can people connect with you?
Liz@texietalk.com is the best email, and I'm kind of slow with email, but I'm really good at it. I will respond. Or at Liz King Events on Twitter, Instagram, any online platform.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Liz. And thank you everybody for joining. I Did It My Way, the podcast that brings you into the story of leading entrepreneurs and tastemakers. Thanks again for joining. I'm Lauren Hines. Thanks again, Liz. And we'll see you on the next episode.
Thank you for being a part of the magic with I Did It My Way. Visit us at www.atlantawep.com.